Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The reigns of Castamere is over. We are just getting started here on post-show recaps. This is the 10-year anniversary of the Red Wedding from Game of Thrones. My name is Grace, but of course I'm not alone. The Starks said they would send their regards, but instead they just showed up. It's LaTanya Starks. LaTanya, how you doing?
I had to come. I was invited. Yeah. I was given the bread and salt, so do nothing bad can happen, right?
Do you want to be invited to a wedding in Westeros?
No, I just went to a wedding. Yeah. It was very un-Westerosi. Not a single person died.
Such a shame. Such a shame.
I know.
Yeah.
It's not really a wedding unless there's a couple deaths.
Yeah. LaTanya, you messaged me about this. It is as we released this podcast exactly 10 years ago, the Reigns of Castamere episode, aka The Red Wedding. Big spoilers. If you didn't know that the Reigns of Castamere episode, if you're like on season 3 episode whatever and you're like, can't wait for the Reigns of Castamere, I've gone so far without being spoiled, and then you listen to this podcast in your feed, I'm so sorry. But season 3 episode 9, the Reigns of Castamere, drops on June 2nd, 2013. And we're going to chat about it.
Yeah. Spoilers for a 10-year-old episode of television.
Yeah.
Like a whole kid of television.
Yeah. A little 10-year-old. Yeah. I'm going to start off with a big question, which is this the most memorable Game of Thrones moment there is? Is it the biggest? Is it the, I don't want to say the watermark of the series, but is it the most reflective of what Game of Thrones is in the cultural zeitgeist, perhaps post the ending was bad? I feel like that's what it that's the cultural zeitgeist of Game of Thrones now, but forget that. Is it just like the most Game of Thrones-y moment in the show's history?
I think it is. I think it's up there with Ned Stark's beheading.
Yeah.
Because no one expected that to happen that didn't read the books. Anyone who had watched television would think that, you know, the guy from the Lord of the Rings that everyone knows his name is not going to get killed early in this show, and he immediately almost gets murdered. So that was a big watermark for the show, but it felt like the Red Wedding made us feel like no one was safe.
I agree. I think that there's a way in which season 1, episode 9, when Ned Stark gets his head chopped off, which is referenced in this episode from The Lovely Hound. I think that there's a way in which that seemed like, I say this a lot. Josh Wigler used this expression and I've just like blatantly stolen it. Although every time I credit it to Josh, I guess it's not plagiarism. But Josh said, let a show tell you what it is. And the end of season one felt like you thought that it was the show about Ned Stark, but it's actually not about Ned Stark. But like, it's still all about the rest of the characters who are here. Right. And then I think season three, it is deep enough into the run to feel like this is now a show about, and I think Benioff and Weiss have said this, that George R. R. Martin said this, that he always knew that when he killed Ed, that Rob was also going to die. Because he said, the next thing you do is you kill the son of the guy who is trying to avenge the death of his father. So he knew pretty quickly that he would get there and he would write this. And I feel like, I think to that point, like the show, it felt like maybe the show is just telling us, well, it wasn't about Ned. It's actually about Rob and John and Arya and everything else. Mm-hmm. And then Rob and Callan just go off the board and their baby. And also they talk about like, also just like in the midst of it, like a bunch of Stark soldiers as well. Right. Like just like,
yeah, like the whole army.
Chaos. Yeah.
Like all of the people on the Stark side, with the exception of the young boys, but no one really believes they're alive.
Yeah.
And Arya and Sansa, the Starks are gone. Yeah. Like their forces have been decimated. They even killed their dire wolves.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very sad. I don't like that.
No.
So
not good.
Yeah. I think that it is such a huge surprise. And I feel like one of the things that makes this such a cultural moment, and I'd love to chat about where you were and where I were when this episode happened. But I think that the thing that happened about this show is that because it's based off a book, there are people who know this is coming. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like there is a way in which like Richard Madden says that he couldn't even pick up the book without being told, hey, your character's going to die. So he knew when he like got this role, like they're like, yeah, your character's going to die in season three. And he's like, oh, bummer. Cause I really feel like I'm like the hero of this, the show.
So did we.
So I'm assuming if you were surprised by it, you were not a book reader. So this idea that the secret was kind of held. And I actually feel like there is this really epic like YouTube reaction video. This is 2013, like such a popular time for YouTube. I was watching YouTube all the time. All these like, remember all these like YouTube influencers who like now are like 32 and you're like, what are they up to now? Because they just like lived on YouTube.
Dollars.
But the YouTube reaction stuff where people who read the books and knew what was coming could film their loved ones reacting to the episode and knowing it would be such I don't think even people realize like how brutal the episode was going to be, because there are some changes between the book and the episode. And yet, but this idea that some people knew it was coming and kind of withheld it from people who didn't know and then get to like sort of not only let them enjoy the show and this epic moment, but also like film their reaction. And this created such a like they say like Twitter was a buzz that night. It was wild. And then all of these slowly the trickle of like compilation videos of reactions to the moment, I feel like create this thing that we are really, I think in the last few years, like HBO is the only one that's seemingly has this, which is like creating Sunday night moments, a TV moment, singular moments that people are watching at the same time.
Yeah, the fact that I remember explicitly 10 years on where I was, what I was doing, how I reacted, who was with me, like that, those are moments that I don't know are created by any other TV show, or not, well, any other network, I guess. And I guess we have to call it Max now.
No, it's HBO. We're watching on HBO, and then we watch.
Mama called him HBO Max. I'm gonna call him HBO Max.
Yeah.
I had not read the books. Yeah. I still haven't read the books.
Yeah.
I am like making my way through the books. The one book that is
Fire and Blood.
Fire and Blood.
Yes.
Because I just don't know how much longer I can wait to find out what happens with those dragons.
Uh huh.
But I have not read any of the Song of Ice and Fire books. Everything to me, typically when I find out an adaptation for TV is going to be made, I shy away from reading the books because I really don't want to be spoiled on anything. I really love experiencing things in the moment in television form, because that's just television and movies is the medium that, you know, strikes me most. Mm-hmm. As is obvious by the fact that I'm doing this podcast right now. but I remember I was living with my family. My aunt was still with us. My aunt and I were the ones who were like major Game of Thrones fanatics, and everyone else in our house was like, yeah, they watch that dumbass show every Sunday and they get so worked up about it. It's like a whole thing. So we ordered food every Sunday to, like, you know, make it special. And I just remember screaming at my television, no, and hearing my aunt scream at her TV. And then we both kind of rushed out to each other and we're like crying. And we're just like, what's happening? How is this allowed to happen? They killed that woman and the baby. Like, why are they like, and if you know anything about like feudal customs, once they exchanged the bread and salt, I was like, okay, they're fine. Because that is like a custom that is supposed to be honored, that if you welcome someone in your home and you feed them the traditional bread and salt, then you are not, they're not supposed to come to any harm under your roof. And the subversion of that was just wild to me.
Yeah, it's a real ancient custom from like the Middle East and parts of Europe as well. That and typically it doesn't always have to be bread and salt. It's sort of this idea of as long as you feed somebody, then you are at a truce. And George R. Martin has talked about what this episode is based on. I guess we should also say, like, in case you forgot, or you're listening to this, you've never watched the Red Wedding or the Reigns of Castamere. Essentially, the episode being that Rob and Catelyn go to Walder Frey. He goes to the twins. He previously had agreed that he would marry one of Walder Frey's daughters or granddaughters to secure an alliance. He breaks that deal and sort of gets married to this woman that he loves from Volantis. Talisa, and so they're coming back to try and earn his favor again, apologize for doing this, and they offer up Edmure Tully, Catelyn's how are they related?
Cousin,
I believe, yeah. That he will get married to a Frey. He does. And then after the wedding, Rob and Catelyn and his wife Talisa and the baby are all killed. And it's shocking and wild and brutal. But yeah, George R. Martin had based it on a couple of events. There's one called the Black Dinner, which was the King of Scotland was fighting this clan called the Black Douglas Clan, and he reached out to make peace and offered them safe passage to the castle. And then at the end of the feast, started pounding a single drum. This is the tale, at least, and brought out a covered plate, revealed it. It was a head of a black boar, the symbol of death. And then they killed them in the courtyard. And there's also the Glencoe Massacre, which was the MacDonald, again, in Scotland. Clan MacDonald stayed with the Campbell clan overnight, and the laws of hospitality supposedly applied, but the Campbells woke up in the middle of the night and started butchering every MacDonald they could get their hands on. So true historical events, as is lots of Game of Thrones. There's lots of stuff that George R. Martin pulled on from medieval history for his thing. But yeah, supposedly real events that he based the Red Wedding on.
Which I feel deeply, because apparently Starks is a Scottish surname.
That makes sense. Yeah. Starks. Yeah. It's a bad impression, I think. Yeah. I don't really remember where I was. I do not believe I watched this live. And the other piece that is, I'm very unique in this, is that I did not watch, or sorry, I knew it was coming, although I had not read the book. So it was a thing I knew was happening. I was trying to, with you before we started the podcast, figure out when I started watching, and I must have started watching between seasons 3 and 4. And I think that the Red Wedding was actually the thing that I heard about that made me start watching the show. And I remember leaving my friends who were very big Game of Thrones fan. They were all like reading the books and they were watching the show, and going home being like, okay, I'll try it. And then watching all of season 1 in a night and coming back and like, Ned Stark. And they're like, wait till you get to season 3. So I jumped in. I remember that I moved in with these folks and was watching week to week for season 4. As we were talking about, my first big Game of Thrones moment is actually season 4, episode 2, which is The Lion and the Rose, which is where Joffrey is killed, which is funny because that feels like that should be huge, but it's not. I guess it's not as sad. It's much more like, oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got him. Yeah. Than Reigns of Castamere, like losing Rob and Catelyn specifically, I feel like. Yeah.
Yeah, because of all of the victories that Rob had amassed, and him being the young wolf, you know, the white wolf, like it really did seem like he was the emerging star of the show.
Yeah.
I mean, we definitely got to spend time with other characters that we knew would be important down the line. There's like a very small Danny storyline. There's a small Jon Snow storyline. But like, I thought that Robb Stark was the person who was going to be it, like king, fully king, not just king of the North, but king.
It's a good story.
Yeah, it's a really great story.
Your dad gets his head chopped off, and you avenge it, and
yeah.
Storm you, and the North Storm winning. Stuff. Yeah, I do feel like probably I feel like the interesting thing is like I actually feel like Richard Madden might be still one of the biggest names to come out of Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
it's probably Pedro Pascal. Which is very interesting that he does not have actually a ton. He has a big moment, but he's makes such a memorable thing out of one season. But is Richard Madden maybe one of the actually most successful people to like come out of Game of Thrones? And like I think there's a difference between like Sean Bean being in Game of Thrones and then like,
right.
But also he hasn't really, you know, whose career has been like gone upwards after Game of Thrones? He's probably like in the top.
Yeah, live, I mean, he's right? won a Golden Globe for I can't remember the name of the show that he did.
Is it the one that he's in? He's not Bodyguard, right?
The Bodyguard or something.
When it sounds like he's always saying "mum," but he's actually saying "ma'am."
Ma'am,
ma'am, ma'am, mum,
mum,
mum. I love you, mum.
I love you, mum. His career has really. I mean, we are going to see more Game of Thrones people popping up. He's one of the people popping up in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
He was there. Yeah, he was in Eternals.
Yeah.
A movie that was not well received. I actually really liked it, but most people don't.
He's I know.
Citadel also not getting great reviews.
Citadel's not great.
But a big Amazon Prime push. So like,
yeah
I mean, like
he's getting that shmoney, but
he's doing stuff.
He's doing lots of things. And he, you know, he was in like the Elton John biopic.
He was
well.
In 1917, I think, right? The war movie. He was.
That's how. Yeah, he was. Like, I feel like every actor from
every British actor
the
was
UK
in.
The, was
yeah. Yeah, in 1917.
In 1917.
It was that one continuous shot they could only get everyone for one day, so they just like got them all and they filmed it all at once.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm so intrigued. Like the making of this. I love this. So Richard Madden and Michelle Fairley, mm-hmm. who play Robb and Catelyn Stark. I love this. Richard Madden says like, yeah, it was so sad. We're like a family. He's like, I knew it was coming, but it was sad. And Michelle Fairley's first line, she says, yes, it was wonderfully beautiful. Just like the stark contrast between like someone who maybe thought this show was like their launching point of their career, which I think it still ended up being, versus Michelle Fairley, who's like, this is actually a pretty cool way to maybe go out on a big hit show.
Right.
She's like, yeah, it was wonderfully beautiful. And I just love the two. He's like, I'm so sad. And she's like, this is pretty cool.
She's been like steadily working too, though.
She has been. Yeah.
And a lot of like UK stuff. You have to have like BritBox in order to see, or AMC Plus
she's
to
in
see
Queen,
what she's doing.
She's in Queen Charlotte, I think, right?
Isn't she? She is in Queen Charlotte. She's also in this show about the mafia.
Gangs of London.
Gangs of London. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, she's doing stuff. She's doing stuff.
I feel like everybody from Game of Thrones is like making their own way, but Richard Madden might be like the biggest name other than Pedro Pascal to come out of this whole thing.
Yeah. Benioff and Weiss talk about this and they say like, it's weird to say that this went great because there were actually a lot of people who were really mad about this. This is like, there's the like shock and awe, and then there's like, how dare you kill Robb Stark?
Yeah.
I think the baby too, like the sequence of events, it's really brutal. They kill the baby and the innocent wife, and then they kill the dog, and then they kill Robb, and Catelyn does kill a Frey, which is
doesn't go down without taking out a Frey.
That's
she
right.
Smacks what's his face, Roose Bolton upside the face too.
She does, and then she gets her throat slit. I feel like I remember her getting her throat slit by not someone. Like someone important, and it's just not random.
Yeah,
just a rando. Robb gets killed by Roose. The Lannisters send their regards, and also one of maybe the most famous lines in all of Game of Thrones as well. The thing I was going when we were starting House of the Dragon and going through, the thing I like just couldn't believe is how many quotes there were from Game of Thrones that felt like they were around forever, but were just from the mind of George R. R. Martin. So like, mm-hmm. you know, you play the Game of Thrones, you either
win or you die.
You win or you die. Chaos is a ladder. Like all mm-hmm. of the stuff that just feels like these could be, you know, proverbs as old as time. And it's like, no, George R. R. Martin just wrote them. There's so much good writing in Game of Thrones, but yeah, the Lannisters send their regards is so fun. And I want to talk about I'll stick with Benioff and Weiss, who say what they think worked so effectively well is you do have three seasons of content to basically build up these people as they're going to be the heroes. And then you completely cut that out from under everybody. But also, it is not the moment that the way most people die on screen. And even Ned Stark's death, I think, is different than this. It was surprising, but also there is the like, we're taking, like, we are bringing you up on to like, we are killing you. Like Joffrey is like, I'm going to enact the death penalty. So you have this, like, in the way that Benioff and Weiss says, there's no death speech. There's not that bittersweet final moment with mm-hmm. the character before it happens. This happens like very late in the episode. It all happens like extremely, extremely fast. There is the awful thing of Arya being basically 50 feet away from her mother and brother and being dragged away by the Hound. This like just like tension. And then when Catelyn, her throat gets like, she falls, it's like we see like nothing in the shot, and then boom, the episode ends. So it is this like, it's very unique way in terms of like depicting death on screen in a way that I think like what a lot of us actually love about Game of Thrones is that it feels more realistic than like that guy's been shot 7 times. He's like, tell my son that I love him and I don't think poorly of him. And then he like croaks and dies. Yeah, this is exactly. just like, no, that person just got their throat slit and they're dead.
And it's, you know, Rob saying mother is his last word.
Yeah.
These murders feel so much more intimate because they happen at a party, you know?
Yeah, true.
Because when the Reigns of Castamere, the, you know, famous song starts to play, we're following Catelyn. And Catelyn knows that something is up. And so we start to realize that something is up. But at the same time, we're like, but there's no way with these characters that they're ever going to do anything. And they're certainly not going to kill that pregnant woman.
Yeah, you think like everybody has plot armor, and they don't in Game of Thrones. Until like seasons like 6, 7, 8, then they do.
And then they have all of it. Then there's just that blood curdling scream that Catelyn lets out when Rob does die, and you know, Weiss and Benioff talk about this, how you would expect the camera to not linger so long on her, just like you know, abjection in this moment, but it does for such a long time. And then finally her throat is slit and it fades to black, and then there's no music over the credits.
Well, there's actually also the thing where they actually don't really linger on the person they linger the most on is kind of Talisa, because Rob is like pressing on her stomach after she's been stabbed. But Rob gets shot and then he stands up and then he gets stabbed by Roose, but we don't have like even the shot of like Rob on the ground of us like looking at him, and it's like confirming he's dead, and Catelyn as well. And there's a big thing I want to talk about that you said you're not a book reader. I don't know how much we want to get. I want to get into it. I don't think we can.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, maybe a continuation of a story for Catelyn Stark, which I think is really interesting.
I definitely know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but I almost feel like, and so like there's this stuff from Benioff and Weiss and also George R. R. Martin where Martin says, like, the thing he wants most, he actually wrote all of Storm of Swords and then came back and wrote this chapter. He's passed over it and then came back. This is the last thing he wrote because he did feel like he was killing kids, like his own kid, like people he's created. But he's like, also like, I feel like I have to do it. And we should really care when someone dies. Like he literally says, like, if someone dies and you're like, go get more popcorn, like it's a failure on his part.
Yeah.
And then Benioff and Weiss talk about how I do feel like even more than Ned Stark, this is the moment where this show does not feel actually like an epic battle of evil versus good, which I do think they probably stray away from by the end. I think that that's the thesis statement for most of the show, that like anything can happen because it's realistic and not like a not as much a fairy tale, if this like a or like a heroic tale of like the Starks just having success over success, right? But they talk about this being a real turning point in terms of like telling the audience, like the people who do good will sometimes die because they do good. Like if you try to do good in this world, that actually might lead to your death, and this is not like always the story of good triumphing over evil, which I feel like at the end of the show with like, you know, we got to defeat the, we got to come together to defeat the White Walkers. Like it kind of is the story, but like, I get it's the end of the show, but
yeah. I just to this day, you know, just watching it again, yeah. I'm like struck by how mundane the rest of the episode is.
It's very mundane
to what happens in the final moments of the episode. Like you really, a Game of Thrones kind of has a thing where they go all out for episode nines, but like, we didn't realize that. I don't think at like in the middle of the watch of it, no, until this moment happened.
Yeah, I think this is the moment, because you have Baelor, which is when Ned gets killed. Then you have the Battle of Blackwater Bay, which I feel like that's a huge moment. And then this, and this is where I start to feel like, yeah, you got to watch out for episode 9.
You got to watch out for episode 9.
Yeah, they're not going to wait for the finale. They're going to do it in the one before.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing I wanted to say about like this idea that like you should care when someone dies, but I also think it's very interesting in the way that, as we were talking about, they don't linger on Rob and Catelyn. Like Catelyn's final moment is her throat gets cut and she falls out of frame. And so we don't actually, the camera doesn't hold to Catelyn and her dying and blood spilling out. And I almost feel like that's also the show saying like, I don't know what it's, but there's something to this, right? Of like, it's this, it is about them, but it's also not about them. This is make like they're gone now. So we're not even going to shout. We're not going to linger on them. And that's the way I feel like the way the credits roll too, of like, okay, done. And now think about it for a while is just like, oh my God, they're gone. I feel like that's a really effective way to hammer home this point that like nobody is safe in Game of Thrones, and just of like, yeah, not lingering on the dead bodies. Just be the one that they do is on, like Grey Wind, right, is Rob's dog they show him dying because he's not dead, and then he dies, and so Arya can see that he's dead,
right?
I just think it's really interesting that it's not like, okay, here's like the still on Rob, who's like now dead on the ground lying over his wife, and like Catelyn bleeding out on the floor. It's just like they move out of frame and they die, they're gone. That's
not
the story.
Precious. The show is not precious about its deaths.
Right.
At all. Right. It is very much like this is business as usual during these times. Like this is how decisions got made. People died. And it's very much not precious about it. It's very upfront and letting you sit with the shock and trauma of it. At the end, like just fading to black and having no music at all over the credits really means that you have to take a second and realize what you just saw.
Yeah. Also very impressive that the credits are soundless, because this is like perhaps, I mean, other than the theme song, which like, boy, just like starting the episode and it cuts into the theme song and I'm like, do I want to watch Game of Thrones again?
I know.
It's so bad that I want to do that. But this song is probably the second most famous song, I think, from other than the one that Ed Sheeran sang. Is The Reigns of Castamere, which I think is a really interesting backstory. The composer, Ramin Djawadi, was told to start writing and composing it. There are lyrics to this song in the books.
I actually know the words.
You do?
Yeah.
I might have to close out the episode with your rendition of Reigns of Castamere.
No.
Which is he was told to start composing it after season one. And you can see from the beginning of season two, The Reigns of Castamere starts to be used so brilliantly. So in season two, episode one, Tyrion whistles it in as he's walking through, I believe, King's Landing. I could be wrong about that. Bronn sings it before the Battle of Blackwater. Yeah. And it is played in every scene where the Lannisters are up to no good. When they are scheming or plotting or deciding, the different versions of it are used. It then will continue to be used as sort of the Lannister theme song. I believe Cersei's coronation also uses a rendition mm-hmm. of the Reigns of Castamere. And it's just brilliant. I know that they have like book material to go off of. And this is like sort of the thing that I think Benioff and Weiss, I give them the most credit for, is that like they really well adapted the source material. But the fact that this is in here so early, to the point that when we get to the Reigns of Castamere playing, the hope is that it's subconscious, right? Catelyn yeah. is like, if in case you're not up to it, Catelyn is like, oh my God, look, she pulls Roose Bolton's like sleeve and she sees the chainmail. Like they give us enough, but like also subconsciously, and the theme is so haunting but beautiful that like, yeah, I guess it could be played at a wedding, but like it feels pretty ominous to the point where like it's just so perfectly done, I think, in terms of it's some of the best scoring and use of like a song, I think, in for me, like TV history. I think it's like brilliant.
It's brilliant. It is a song that is essentially gloating about the Lannisters winning a powerful victory over someone who now the reins we bore his halls and no one there to hear. You know, it is an epic song in so many different ways, and the instrumentalization of it in the show as we just hear those first notes of it and register Catelyn Stark just being like, wait a minute, something is wrong here.
Well, I also love the lore that like they can put it where it's like she knows what this understanding is that she knows what the song is and knows what it means. And she's almost in too much disbelief and there's no Lannisters here. So why, you know? And then it's like, it's not until she realizes that it's like Roose and Walder who have been plotted and perhaps been given a fair amount of gold from Tywin
Lannister. I bet.
To do this. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing but gold.
Yeah.
It is Ryan here. And I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It really, the betrayal, I mean, you talked about the salt and bread, which again, we talked about is like based on a real custom in the Middle Ages and a lot of in the Middle East. But boy, that's so effective because like, I what I love too is that they talk about in an interview with George R. R. Martin about, he's like, it's kind of cruel of you to be like, here's a rule and it's an important rule. And then immediately be like, and I'm going to break the rule.
Yeah.
I mean, like the big betrayal is like, well, you don't bread and salt, you don't, you know? And then he's like, just immediately breaks the rule. And we're like, how dare you? This rule that I just learned about 5 minutes ago, that you broke that rule. It's like, he's like, well, it's based on a real thing. And it's like, yeah but still. It's
I care cool. way too much about medieval times, not just dinner and tournament, but just medieval times to not know what that custom was before watching Game of Thrones. So I definitely thought that meant they were safe. But at the same time, we've got all of these kind of clues that are dropped about never being able to trust Walder Frey. And just how disgusting of a person he is, bringing out his daughters and granddaughters for Rob to see who he could have potentially had. He can't even remember all of their names.
Yeah, we were talking about this with House of the Dragon, that it did feel like one of the things about House of the Dragon was there wasn't much comedy. And this is a pretty serious episode, even not in King's, not in like in the Riverlands. Like, it's pretty serious everywhere. And so really the comedy actually comes from the man who by the end of the episode we maybe hate the most, which is when Walder Frey cannot remember his his own granddaughter's name, and he's not even close because he's so like Walinda Watrita, and she's like Mary. It's so funny. Yeah, if it wasn't so awful, it'd be funny.
Yeah, and him talking about I always know what's going on under a dress.
So gross.
Just
so gross.
A gross man.
I mean,
got what was coming to him in the end.
When his wife, she has a name, Jouse, I think, like Jouse. When he just says, "I'll find another." Just like you disgusting man. You're so cowardly. What a man.
Doesn't care at all about anyone else but himself.
Yeah. Who do we hate the most coming out of this episode? Because I feel like it is the competition between Roose and Walder. And I think it's probably Walder. Roose is the idea that he marries the Frey girl who is the heaviest, so that he can get the heaviest dowry. Yeah, it's not great. No. He's pretty despicable. But and I also hate how like he never really like. I hate that he never like says anything to like he says Lannister send their regards, but I wish he would like at least Walder's like I'm despicable, you know. He gives a despicable monologue, and I feel like Roose is such a like snaky little rat here.
Oh, he's the worst. Just everything about him is terrible. He is a noted rapist. Like that's how he got his son.
That's right.
And he's like talking about how normal and fine the bedding custom is. Just a disgusting person that you happen to get sat next to at a wedding. But you learn how to deal with people like that if you're Catelyn Stark. But Walder Frey is really just sitting there and like he's slow clapping and sneering throughout this whole thing.
Yeah.
He's taking joy in all of this pain and misery that is about to get doled out on his grounds.
Yeah.
And it's really disgusting to watch.
I think some other people we could put on the list to vote for like an LVP here is the four men who shoot
Grey Wind.
Yeah, I think all of those people suck. I think not far by Edmure. Maybe I'd put on the list as well, played by Tobias Menzies, who's also gone on to have great another person who's had a lot of success post.
Yeah, he had a lot of success before too.
That's true. He's like kind of weaselly in this episode as well. I don't think he's nearly as bad as like breaking, you know, the hospitality truce or whatever, but like the fact that he's like they're making fun of him. They call literally his uncle and cousin call him a fool.
Yes.
This episode. So you
just
know.
So excited that he gets a young, attractive wife because he was dreading what a Frey woman might look like.
Literally knows nothing about her personality, but is like, doesn't oh cool, care. She's hot.
Yeah,
cool.
She's hot.
This is great, great news. The way he's like loves the bedding ceremony. Even Rob, one of the things I do like about the show is that like nobody's really comes out of the show clean here, as like Rob is like, yeah, it would seem weird to like do the bedding ceremony, but like you're from Volanta, so whatever.
Yeah exactly. Yeah. It's really, the show is just so smartly adapted that it's, I mean, it like the issues that we have with the show don't come from the adaptation. It comes from when they run out of material to adapt. So all of the adaptation is really well done and the characterization is great. And you do get to see all different sides of these people, even the ones that you root for.
Yeah. Yeah. We can talk a little bit about some of the differences between the Reigns of Castamere from the book and the show, because I think there's some interesting stuff. Talisa is not Talisa from Volantis. She's actually Jane Westerling, which I think might have been a tad more interesting in the fact that she is the Westerling of the Crags, which are a minor house sworn to the Lannisters. So like that's really kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter, I guess. And I also don't think she's pregnant, or that they or potentially they don't kill Jane Westerling and she's not pregnant, I think. I'll have to like pull this up, but I don't believe. Yeah. Oh, she's not there. She's at River Run, and so she's not at the wedding. And I don't think she's pregnant.
Okay.
So that's a pretty big change.
It's a huge change.
It's a huge change.
A huge change just for them to be able to murder someone in the child.
They wanted a pregnant lady to be stabbed.
Yeah, in the belly.
Which, you know, I think it's very shocking. So
it was, yeah. It was really, it just kind of came out of nowhere. And that happened very quickly. It's like, yeah, a prison shiving.
Yeah, it's brutal. Yeah. Oh, maybe that guy is that the worst guy? The guy who stabs, yeah, Talisa, maybe? Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to see. There's a lot of changes to some of the other stuff that's not happening there. Brendan Blackfish is not at the wedding either. As well, he stays at River Run. And it seems like he thank God for his bladder.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he goes out to find a tree to pee on.
I guess I would survive the red wedding.
Yeah.
Because I am constantly just going to the bathroom.
John Umber, the Umbers do get mentioned this episode, not by anybody at the wedding, but by that is where Rickon and Osha are going to go.
Yeah.
But John Umber is involved in a drinking contest at the red wedding and has to be subdued by 8 men and is held captive after the red wedding, which I think is a missed opportunity. Yeah.
That's amazing.
The book also changes Ned and his views on the bedding.
Okay.
Catelyn in the books, which this does feel like sometimes you're like George R. R. Martin, you're like, I know you're trying to be like realistic at the time, but like your characters are too young, you know, like what you know what I actually love this change that they're like, nah, Ned's too good. Ned's too nice. Ned wouldn't let a bedding. He wouldn't let the bedding happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not it's I do okay, this is an interesting who do you think in the books, Latanya, it's not Walder Frey's young new wife that gets killed but after being taken hostage by Catelyn. Could you do you want to take a I mean it's not like a kid but like it I just don't think this would have worked in the show. She takes one of Walder Frey's grandsons. No, oh, it's one of his grandsons who is employed as Walder Frey's fool. And the character's name is Jingle Bell. I don't think this would have... I think this is a good change to not kill a character called... Like, Jingle Bell? Last moment, it's way more badass to kill his wife his young, than to kill Jingle Bell, who is his grandson, but also is named Jingle Bell. And I am not making this
You're up. Not making it up?
No. No. She also gouges her face with nails when she's because she's driven mad when Rob dies. She like basically kills herself before she's killed. So yeah, that's do you want to talk a little bit about like a big change from the book moving forward is Catelyn Stark becomes Lady Stoneheart, is essentially revived from the dead. Yeah. And becomes a pretty major point of the books moving forward. There's a lot of like chapters about Lady Stoneheart who like has the like slit throat thing. Her like eyes are right. Yeah, I want to say that she is raised from the dead by there's a group in the show and I can't remember, but alas, doesn't matter. But by Beric Dondarrion.
Okay.
The Brotherhood Without Banners raises her from the dead. Yeah, I know people were like waiting for it every season. I think at the end they were like, maybe there'll be one more scene with Lady Stoneheart, but they really they choose not to go there, which I think on one hand I don't mind the like all the supernaturally like evil stuff comes from basically Beyond the Wall, like the White Walkers, and then and the Mountain. And the Red Priestess, yeah. And like the Mountain kind of gets revived and like, but God, Lady Stoneheart, it's so cool. It's so cool.
As a horror fan, I would have loved a Lady Stoneheart in my show. Yeah. I will say that I thought it was really funny when they get to the, I don't know what episode this is, but when they get to the point where Lady Stoneheart's character would have been introduced, they just have, I think, the Hound like, pee in the river where she would have come from.
Right.
So that kind of put that to bed in terms of whether or not there would be a Lady Stoneheart. But I know that would have been a lot of magic, but that would have been really freaking cool.
Yeah. I think Beric Dondarrion, I feel like he gives himself up to revive Lady Stoneheart. So yeah. Anyway, before we like wrap up with the Red Wedding, is there anything like non-Red Wedding that you like? We basically have John kills Oral, and Tim and Ygritte are going to like go on the run and go back. They like finally turn against the wild, their wildling. Like he's joined them, but he turns against them, which is pretty big. Sam and Gilly see the wall. It's a pretty exciting moment. Gilly. We have the first time that Bran wargs into Hodor.
Yeah.
Pretty big moment as well.
That was a huge moment. He wasn't even intending to do it.
No.
And then he wargs into the direwolf.
Yeah. And he's like, it was so easy, Jojo. Jojo's like, I have been telling you.
I know. Poor Jojen Reed.
Yeah. Poor Rickon. He's going to get like separated eventually.
I know.
Like, taken by Reek and killed.
And then puberty happens and then he gets murdered.
You got to get murdered. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I feel like underrated Game of Thrones character.
I agree. I love Natalia Tena.
Yeah.
In like everything that she does, she just, those like huge eyes are so like almost like warm and like open, and really draws you into her performance. And she really does not have to do a single thing to protect these boys.
Yeah.
But the only reason that they live as long as they do is because of Osha.
Yeah.
And then she ends up, you know, with the fate that she gets. It's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Danny's in Yunkai, and we get fake Dario Naharis, who's not that hot, but Danny loves him.
And so Ed Skrein is actually like a little more, I think he's more attractive without the wig.
Fair enough.
If you see him in like normal clothing without the wig, you'd be like, okay.
I'm pretty sure book Dario also has like weird colored hair and all of this stuff.
Really?
But, like, I just think like, yeah, they're like, I guess we got to do, and like, nah, fine. We'll just get like, you know, what's his name to come in. Yeah. But she takes over Yunkai.
She does, continuing to take over places where there are slaves and, white savioring away, Danny. It's so hard. Like, part of me was just like, oh, am I going to watch the next episode of this show? Or am I going to start over from the beginning and just start watching it? Josh did say that he halfway hoped that this podcast would lead to us, the two of us, doing a Game of Thrones rewatch podcast.
I mean, I was so close to being like, I was just going to put on episode one. I think I'm just going to throw it on. I'm going to do it.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
I was like, this... Game of Thrones, and it was good. It was so good. It was so good. It's so good.
It is so good.
This, I mean, really, it's really understated how much I effing loved Game of Thrones. And like, I really like my friends. I'll give them a shout out, Andrew, Pat, and Dylan, who were like talking about Game of Thrones. Like, that seems cool. I mean, I'll go, yeah, whatever. I'll go watch it. Watch the first episode, watch 9 more episodes. I'm like, oh my God, Ned Stark. And really like my fascination. I like, but I have all of the like coffee table books. I play Crusader Kings, one of my favorite games. There's a Game of Thrones mod where you can like play. You can either start at the beginning of Robert's Rebellion, or you can play as like Robert having won the rebellion.
Oh,
you can
play, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and you can play as literally anybody. Like you can play as like Littlefinger, like anybody who's like a lord, right? You can play. It's really fun. It's really good. We played the Game of Thrones board game a ton. We played it on RHAP game night one time. So like, this show was like so much of my life for so long, and I just hate that it ended so poorly.
I know.
Yeah. Have you seen? I'll try to pull it up as I'm talking. There's a group who decided to basically audiobook style redo as if the show got 2 full last seasons.
No.
I want to find the name. It's there's a TikToker who is an awesome Game of Thrones person, like has just read all the books a bunch of times, and like will often, like when House of the Dragon was happening, would like often like fact check and do all this like, or like explain, not fact, but like explain the differences. Mm-hmm. And she participated, and I can't remember who she was the voice actor for. I will try and find it and either put it in the show notes or tweet it out when the episode comes out. But I have not checked it out, but they basically rewrote the last 2 seasons of the show. And I think it's either free or like a Patreon program. They probably can't like release it because they'd have to get like copyright, the rights from George R. R. Martin. But yeah.
That's anyway. Really cool. I mean, there are so many things to be said about how the show ends, but one of the worst things is that the show got condensed because, Dan and Dave were going to go make a Star Wars that never happened.
Right, right. So this is a Game of Thrones Season 8 Redux. So it's just Season 8, I apologize. But you can find it on YouTube.
On YouTube.
Will put it in the show notes. I think it's very cool. It's all voice acted. And yeah, they redo the last season. But yeah, what a moment. The Red Wedding. And I do feel like it's probably the high watermark of maybe not like, again, I don't think it's like maybe the best thing. I think that it might be more compelling and like better written, but like there is nothing more Game of Thrones than I think the Red Wedding in terms of it being a cultural talking point at the time, which Game of Thrones certainly was right up until the end of the show. It being exactly what the show is, which is like a gruesome sort of like trying to be at least this like, you know, death can happen to anybody and it will happen and it's real and we're gonna like just move on. Like again, the Arya stuff where she's so close with the Hound. I also love Arya being like, boy, one day I'm really gonna stick a sword in your eye, put it through the back of your head. Just like never not amazing.
Arya-ing.
Yeah.
Always Arya-ing.
Yeah, for real. I just don't think there's like a more Game of Thrones moment than the Red Wedding. It's like it's I think the best Game of Thrones moment.
It's so iconic and unexpected for people who I imagine if you read the books, you know, you were like threw your book down when this happened, you know.
Even when I reread, it's like it's incredibly sad to read because it's like, yeah, you don't get these people again. Like even when you know it's like I read it knowing it was happening, but yeah, it's really brutal. I think the David Nutter, I think is the director of the episode, talked about reading it and like just not being able to turn the page because he knew it was coming. Oh. Like it's just brutal. Yeah.
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 I do still enjoy watching videos of people reacting to things from Game of Thrones, and the Red Wedding is right up there in terms of reactions. So
I would love to hear people's thoughts. You know, in terms of if you have a different thought, because I think there is like, I think Bran being pushed out the wall, I think is I don't think that's the bit, but like I think you could make a case. I think Ned's death, you can make the case. There was one more. I was Danny and the dragons being
the dragon. I would also put in there when Danny goes to get the Unsullied.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, a dragon is not a slave. Fire roasts that one guy who's talking shit about her the whole time.
Yeah, Tyrion killing Tywin. I think also like the Oberyn head smush is.
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
Another one for me. That was because that is season 4, right? That's season 4, I think.
I believe so, yeah.
Because because the beginning of season 4 is Lady Olenna poisoning Joffrey and then Tyrion gets arrested for it. Yeah.
Right.
So that moment was probably Joffrey dying. I actually think Oberyn's head being smushed to me was a much bigger shocker as I was watching live than I think Joffrey.
Yeah.
Dying was, because at least Joffrey was like, you're pretty happy. And Oberyn dying was like, so sad.
I know, so sad. Yeah. Cersei blowing up the entirety of the Sept.
Yeah.
That was a wild moment that happened.
Yeah.
And
but I think for the sake of it,
about it.
I think, you know, again, talking about like the Ned Stark thing, it's early in the show. And I do feel like that was one that like, I'd have to look at the ratings, but it does not feel like people were watching it in the same way that like by season 3, people were watching this show. And it was a cultural thing that people were doing. Cause I think season 1 is in the summer, I think as well. I could be wrong about that as well. So there's just something about the Red Wedding that is like so iconic. And I think arguably one of the best TV moments ever. And for me, the best Game of Thrones moment, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else, LT? Did we miss anything?
I don't know if there's much more. It's just phenomenal that we get to talk about this. I can't believe it's the 10-year mark already.
Yeah, that's wild.
That's wild. And to put something as iconic as the Red Wedding in such a mundane episode of television is just, you know, it's king shit, you know? It's just the pinnacle of what we look to HBO for in our Sunday night TV. And I hope that we get many more moments like that of the Red Wedding, though it's almost impossible to duplicate that kind of thing.
Well, we got our episode 9 moment for House of the Dragon. If you haven't watched House of the Dragon.
There was an episode 9 moment, but it wasn't like, yeah, it was like, what?
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, what? Why are you trying to do this? Yeah. Stop. Yeah. I actually feel like they were like, we'll just put in episode 10. So anyway, I feel like I don't want to spoil House of the Dragon just in case.
Yeah.
If you like, we're not, if you were burned by the end of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And we're like, I didn't do it. I actually think it's worth doing. So if you're it's listening to this, it is worth doing.
It's worth doing. And they're actually filming. That's like one of the few things that's filming right now.
I don't know. That feels bad to me that they're.
No, I'm just saying that, you know, if you haven't seen it, you're going to get episodes of House of the Dragon a lot quicker than you're going to get any of your other beloved shows. So.
Fair enough. But also, I remember all the movies that like went through during the last writer's strike, and like they're really bad.
So. Oh, no, I'm not looking forward to it being. Yeah. I mean, just because they finished the scripts doesn't mean those scripts are perfect.
I heard a thing, they're filming Deadpool, and what's his face is not allowed to ad-lib on set because that's writing.
Yeah.
So he's not allowed.
I don't understand why they're filming.
Just stop.
Everyone needs to stop.
Or you could pay
the writers.
You could pay your writers.
That's something that, you know, you could pay them the 0.83% of your billions of dollars.
Well, if there's a writer's strike, I feel like that's plenty of opportunity to keep looking for anniversary dates as we finish recording a 10-year anniversary of the Reigns of Castamere. I'd be very excited to go back into the vault. And this was very fun, Latanya. I'm glad that you suggested that. Yeah, it was very fun.
I'm happy that we got to do this together. We haven't podcast together in a bit. And, you know, let us know if you would be interested in a rewatch podcast.
Oh my gosh. I don't know. No promises.
None.
LT, what else do you got going on and where can people find you?
Well, speaking of Game of Thrones, Josh and I really can't give up on our search for content. We're doing a special series of verses. Where we're putting the Succession finale up against other big finales from television history, specifically HBO shows. So we're doing the finale of Succession versus the finale of Game of Thrones. I think it's going to be really interesting to rewatch that episode again after I couldn't throw it because it was digital and on my television, but I felt like I threw it in the trash.
What if you rewatch it and you're like, actually, it's fun. It's good.
I know that's what we're wondering is going to happen. So we'll find out very soon because we're recording that on Monday.
I actually feel like my complaints of like the end of Game of Thrones is much more that like a lot of stuff, not everything, but a lot of it made sense, but it was too rushed because they like shortened the season.
Exactly. So it was like, just too rushed.
Yeah, the stuff actually like is what I think should have happened.
Right. Just
we got there too quickly.
So. Yeah, it was really rushed. So we'll be talking all about that. Speaking of things that are ending or have ended, you can check out the final episode of our podcast about Barry, because that show is now also gone. I feel like so many things are ending that I don't even know what to do with myself.
They are. It was a big week for maybe Ted Lasso, Barry, Succession. Yeah.
Yeah. Huge week.
Mrs. Maisel, I think, is ending soon.
Mrs. Maisel. Yeah. Mike Bloom and I have a great discussion about the final episode of Barry. Sarah Carradine, who I love and I'm happy that I got to podcast with, even if it was about a dog of a show, Love and Death, was not very good. Mm. But we talked all about it and its final episode. And had some fun doing that. And then I'm over at RHAP with Haley and Kurt talking about Top Chef season 20, International All-Stars, which is also about to come to a close as they head to Paris and do some cooking. And the next episode is going to feature a noted gymnast, Suni Lee. So like all of my passions are converging at once and I'm very excited about it.
We won't name names and won't spoil it, but that's one that show is one person's to lose, right?
Top Chef? Yes. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be surprised if that person loses the show.
Yeah. All right. I am talking about, well, did my Succession recap with Justin Josh and then the deep dive. Actually, it was just with Jess and Mike Bloom. And then Josh joined Amanda and I for the deep dive this week for the series finale. Also did a Yellow Jackets finale pod. And Errol and I are going to dive into The Idol, LT. Yeah. I'm not done with HBO, so... We'll see. We're going to be very realistic about the show. You do not have to watch the show, and actually, we might encourage you not to watch the show after we watch
it. I'm going to watch it just so I can like come on the podcast at some point.
Great, love it. Also covering movies each week. Across the Spider-Verse comes out this week, so we're going to be covering that. And Ariel, Rich, and I are doing a Dark rewatch podcast, which has been very fun. I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace. I guess until next time, the Lannister send their regards.
Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.